My on?
Yes, I'm on. Cool. Okay, so this is part two. Just out of an interest, how many people are here for part one? Okay, let's ask the question differently. Who wasn't here for part one? Why not? We have cars. Okay, so what we're going to do now is look at what's new in SharePoint Server 2013, part two. For those of you that don't know me, Wayne Newington, Principal Consultant, Microsoft New Zealand. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. Let's kick on. Okay, so what we did in part one was that we looked at SharePoint workloads, just give you a bit of a view, overview what that's like. Looked at some of the platform level improvements. What we're going to do this time is that we're going to dive down to a bit more detail around the service applications that are in SharePoint Server 2013. So, the key thing about service applications in 2013 is architecturally they are the same as what they were in 2010. Now, this is actually a good thing. So what we had going between 2007 and 2010 was this radical new approach, okay? So we got rid of the SSP and all that horrible other stuff, came up with this new service application architecture model that we could have, and then we could consume service applications across farms and do all that other cool and funky stuff and, you know, set up multiple service applications. That plumbing is still there. That plumbing has not changed. So that is good. So what this basically means is that we can actually put investments into other parts of the product to actually extend across what we can actually do from a service application perspective. So, here we go. What's new and different in the service applications that we've got in SharePoint Server 2013? What we've got is that we've got a whole lot of new ones, and those are the ones with the little yellow stars beside them. So these are new to SharePoint Server 2013. The ones with the little green circly things means that these have actually been enhanced or modified or had a bit of an overhaul associated with them. The ones that are in red have been removed, gone, deprecated. Okay? What we're going to do is that we're going to go through each one of these individually just to understand what's actually happened to them. You know, what is this new service application? What's new from this particular service application? You know, what's actually been modified in it? And what's actually happened from the ones that we've removed. The one that I'm not going to go into detail on is actually the web analytics one. Basically, the web analytics has now been moved into the search service application. Okay? So when we go from SharePoint Server 2010 to 13, there's no more web analytics. It's now part of the search service application, part of the infrastructure and plumbing that we've got there. Okay? So let's kick off. The first one we've got is that we've got access services. So this is new. So you're probably thinking, well, actually, there was access services in 2010. What are you talking about? We've actually got two different flavors now. We've got access services 2010, and we've got access services 2013. So the 13 one basically provides the ability to have a more collaborative type web application approach where what we can do is provide this abstraction layer that sits on top of and across SQL Server. So if you kind of think about this, what we're doing here is that we're taking Access databases and we're moving them up into the SharePoint environment, which now has those databases that are used by the Access system residing in the SharePoint databases. Okay, so this provides quite a neat little collaborative way to go through and actually start, you know, managing those access assets in a managed way. Now, there is a bit of a couple of catches around this. You do need the Access Services databases to be on SharePoint, on SQL Server 2012. Okay? Only those databases. Your farm doesn't have to be on the SQL Server 2012, so you can still be running 2008 or, heaven forbid, 2005. You can still do that, but the Access databases that you're using for Access Services does need to be in SQL Server 2012. So basically, what does this actually look like from an architectural perspective? So what we have is that we have our users sitting there working away, wanting to create these access databases. They cook in through the web front end, obviously, but because this is a service application, it goes off and hits the servers that are running the access services, which then provides this wire up and hook out to the actual databases that are going to be sitting out there. So what we can do here is that we can actually go out, retrieve our SQL objects from there. We can then, you know, store our HTML pages, our JavaScript, our CSS styles, etc., and start manipulating and working on those. Now, the other interesting thing about this is that every time we create an Access database, it actually creates another SQL Server database for us. So there's actually a one-to-one relationship that we've actually got there, which kind of makes sense. However, for those of us that are a bit pure around our naming standards when it comes to our SharePoint databases, guess what? It's a good. Can't get rid of those, unfortunately, okay? So this is one of the few databases that you've got there where, unfortunately, you're going to get stuck with GUID names in there, okay? Which kind of makes sense because every time you create a new Access application, it needs a new database associated with it and it needs to be unique. So that's all pretty funky and pretty neat, so Access services. A new service application is the application management service. Now, this is required if we're going to do applications. So you're kind of thinking, well, hang on, I thought everything in SharePoint's an application. Well, it is, but there are some applications, not every application is equal. So we've got our special type of applications, which are above the document libraries, the picture libraries, etc. Although those are applications, we've now got our special SharePoint applications. So we need to maintain some additional information around these, primarily around what are the licenses and what are the permissions associated with that particular application. And this is where the application management service comes into play. So if we do want to have applications in our environment, including using the ones out in the marketplace, we need to have the service application started up and provisioned in our particular farm. So what it does is that if we go out, for example, out to the marketplace and we want to pull down an app from there, it brings down the permissions associated with that and the licenses associated with that, and stores it into the database associated with the application management service application. This is then used every time that application is requested or when the application is actually used. So it goes out there and actually checks what's actually in that particular place. So the way that this works is that we've got our users sitting on the left-hand side there, basically wanting to come up and deploy an application into their website. So they'd go in through the web front end. They'd then go out to the application server, which has been hooked up to provide those applications. And that information will actually come back and be stored into the permissions and licenses into the databases. Now, because we also want to be IT pro friendly, we've got our app management professionals being able to manage the licenses, the permissions, etc. around that, and they can do direct access back into the application management. So essentially the way that this works is user goes out, gets the application, pulls the application down, permissions, etc. are stored in their databases, which is then checked and validated every time they go to use it. So if you don't have the application management service going, then you can't actually use the SharePoint applications that you want to use. Right. So the next one that we've got is business data connectivity services. So you're kind of probably thinking, well, this is an existing one. What's the big deal with that? So how many people have seen this slide before? Okay. It's a standard slide that we've got on BCS. So what exactly is BCS? Provides the connectivity services out to different things such as line of business, data, databases, web services, etc. So architecturally, this hasn't actually changed. The model's still the same. However, what is different here is OData. So OData is now a fully bridged brother, or can be used as part of actually going out and using BCS to go out and get data. So for the developers that are out there, okay, not only do you have to learn OAuth, you now also have to learn OData. Okay, so you need to get your head around how do these things actually work and how do these fit in. Okay, and conceptually everything else still works the same. You can still put them into your Office applications. You can have your BCS client. You can take them offline. Designer tools, blah, 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 blah. Okay, standard stuff. Except OData is the new cousin. So the other thing we have got is that we have got these BCS external events. So one of the issues that we have got, or one of the things that is a little bit troublesome with BCS is that I'm using my BCS, I've gone out, connected out to an external data store, but I can't actually do any event processing on it. What happens if that data changes? I've got to go out there and grab it again, or how do I know that it's actually changed depending on what I'm doing? So that was one of the limitations. So what we've got is, as part of SharePoint 2013, is we can still do our standard operations that we've got out there, so we can do our full CRUD that's going out there, but we can now get notifications coming back from the external system to actually go back and actually notify us that something's actually changed, okay, which is quite cool. So that means we can actually do something. So if a new data item gets added into the database or gets changed, we can now get an event that can be fired that comes back in to notify our SharePoint server environment that we can now do some additional processing on that. That's pretty cool. However, there's a bit of a caveat around this, as with most things. Basically, it does depend on that external system. What we basically do from a SharePoint server perspective is that we provide an endpoint for it to connect to. And that needs to be some sort of an event which actually hooks in to notify SharePoint. So it's completely dependent on that external system that's sitting out there to notify us from a SharePoint perspective that something's actually changed and something's actually happening in there. So that could potentially mean that you may want to have some type of timer jobs or some type of event processing itself to actually do something to notify SharePoint that something has changed externally. Okay? But it does provide the ability now for us to get external notifications of external systems that something has changed. Sorry? Is there a question? No? Somebody sneezed? Okay. Cool. Right. So what about client object model support? Okay, so under SharePoint 2010, if you wanted to go to an external system, the only way to do it from a CSOM perspective was to create an external list and then treat it like any other type of access to a SharePoint list. It's a little bit painful because you had to create this external list which potentially anybody could pick in. So what we've got now is, if we go to SharePoint, we've got the ability now for the BDC, from a client object model perspective, to provide the ability through the client object model to connect directly out to the external systems without having to create an external list. Okay? That's pretty cool. No? Yes? No? Cool. You can clap. Okay. Right, you had a question. So the observation is if you had CRM, you could use, from CSOM, you could connect directly to CRM using BCS, and the answer to that is yes. Okay? Directly. Because it's now available in the CSOM and to go through the BDC runtime. Okay? That's why I deserve to clap. So the question is, could you use Access to also go through?
If you were using Access to build some kind of interface in your first set of slides,
yep.
Is that correct?
Okay, so with Access, you're still dealing directly with SQL. So can Access use BDC to go through? And I don't know the answer to that. I get to ask you a question later. So Access Services, for Access Services 2013 is an overlay for SQL Server.
Not for any data model.
Yeah. Could you use JavaScript? I don't know. Okay. So I need to ask you a question later. So that I have to think of a tough question now. Okay. But ping me an email later and I'll find out for you. Okay. Right. So, Excel services. So, basically, we've still got Excel services. It has had a bit of an uplift internally. So you can still do this interactive reporting and sharing, etc., that we had before. We can also use the analytics tool based on using the Power Pivot. However, you do need SQL Server 2012 to utilize that functionality. So it still becomes the platform to be able to go out and build business applications. So you still get that whole richness and experience around there that you've got. What we've also got, though, is that from an Excel Services perspective, we have got a couple of other little variations around this. One of them is something called Excel Forms. So the scenario here is, how many times have people put out like a survey to say, are you coming to a party, or what size T-shirt do you want? Okay, and they usually set up like discussion forums, or they often do surveys to do that type of thing. This is where Excel Forms comes into play. It basically provides an overlay into an Excel-type spreadsheet to enable you to actually populate that data. So basically, you create this Excel form, which is using the access-type approach on top of that, which then populates our Excel spreadsheet of the information that you actually want to put in that. So you can use it for doing some very simple-type forms-based development on that. Okay, so it's quite a cool little feature that you've got. We've also got this concept of using Excel anywhere. So the idea being here is that we can actually take up any HTML and actually inject it out there. So what we can basically do is say, right, I want to treat this bit, whatever that HTML bit, as an Excel spreadsheet or an Excel form that we've actually got there. So that's pretty cool. A new one that we've got is the machine translation service. So basically what this provides, the ability to do translations for us. So talked in the previous session about doing things such as the variations in the translations. This is a service application that provides the ability to do this. So what it basically does, it provides the ability to hook up into any cloud-based service to do the translations for us. So we could have some type of document or artifact or bit of content that we want to get converted over to another language. So what we can do there is that we can then get the machine translation service going up, we can then get it to connect out, do the translation for us, and then we can bring that back and do any modifications, etc., on that. So this is basically based on the WAS architecture, so it makes it, you know, very scalable to do it. And we can also support synchronous, asynchronous, and streaming of the actual content that we want to get translated out there. And we can go through, we can translate any documents, we can translate pages, we can do sites, and of course we can go through and extend it. So essentially the high-level process that we go through on this is that we've got the end user sitting out there and they want to translate something. So what they do is that they connect through to the SharePoint server environment, which then goes out through to our translation service, which then, based on how we configure it, we can say, right, we can put a timer job associated with this, or we can send it directly out to our translator service. So the one that's provided, that we provide the wire up to, is the Microsoft Translator Service. So this is a free service that you can use to actually go through and translate your documents or artifacts that you want to do with that. Okay? And it works reasonably well. But with any of these things, obviously, you know, apply the grey matter to it and actually get somebody to go through, because it's very easy to insult other people in other languages. So, you know, it's a good starting point for getting some of this done. Now, this is actually using a standard format, and I can't remember the name of the format, so don't ask me that question. So it uses a standard format, which is used as part of the translation service. So what we can do is that if you don't want to use the service, or you want to take it offline, you can actually save that file or format and then take it off and take, you know, do it manually as part of the processing. Okay. So the managed metadata service. So this has basically been enhanced. So the managed metadata was always kind of like the plumbing behind things. So it had the ability to have our term stores, our term groups and stuff like in there. And it had this funny thing that was on the side there, which is around the content type hub. Okay, and it's kind of like, well, why did that kind of go into the managed metadata service? Well, it's basically because it provides the plumbing to everything else. So what basically happened as part of the managed metadata service is that concept has been extended. So it's basically providing the wire up and usage for other things which are used throughout SharePoint. Things like navigation. So we can now control our navigation across our SharePoint environment using the managed metadata service. And don't answer your question. So basically we can define as like a hierarchy within the managed metadata what's going to be our navigation throughout our whole environment. Find it there, and then our navigation providers that are on our site can hook into that and use a consistent navigation across there. Okay, that's quite neat, quite funky that we can actually do that. It can also be used for other things like hooking into using terms. We can also use it for doing search-driven pages as well. So this whole concept about the managed metadata service application, it's becoming more of a glue, a gel for the rest of the environment to bring some a whole lot of additional consolidated services. So not only have we got that, but we've also enhanced on it such that we can have new term usage models associated with that as well. There's also multilingual improvements. So it used to be a bit of a pain if you wanted to, you know, have different terms or term groups or term sets in different languages. It wasn't that easy to actually go through and translate them. Now that's a lot easier to do. Also, when we go into the data view of a list, we can now edit this directly in the data view. And about time. So the question that usually comes up, what about InfoPath? He's after a car, I can tell. You're going to ask that question. So the answer to InfoPath is, unfortunately, no. So if you've got an InfoPath form and you've got a managed metadata field in there, you've still got the same restrictions that you can't actually manage, you can't actually change the managed metadata field. Okay, that. However, there's always been a however. Basically, the taxonomy API has been extended. So we now expose it using CSOM and the REST interface. So if you're using something like InfoPath, then you can potentially use REST to get in there to actually get the data back and manage it that way. Okay, so there is other options around this. So this is a huge, you know, area, particularly what I really like is the data view editing support, because that used to drive me nuts. Okay. So, managed navigation. So what we can do here is that we can actually have our navigation and URLs based on our hierarchy. So I've kind of alluded this to before. So the advantage about this is that it does provide us, you know, ability to have clean URLs associated with this. So this actually helps on the search engine optimization. We can set up the navigation settings in the term store. And then we can have this concept about having dynamic topic pages. So if you kind of think about this, what we can do is potentially have like an e-commerce site or a catalog type site. So you could have your products sitting in the managed metadata store, and then we can have these dynamic, you know, these topic pages, which can look at or be associated with this particular node and our managed metadata to say, right, if I'm here, show or use this information, you know, or display the information under here or at this particular point using this particular page style. So this is kind of moving away from that individual page per thing that we're looking at. So it's a bit like how, for those of you who have done any commerce server development, okay, it's the same type of concept of that, where you have like a standard page which hooks in, and that always displays the content as part of that. It's like tag-based contextualization, exactly. Okay, so it's pretty cool. Okay. Office web applications. Okay, so Office web applications no longer exist in SharePoint. So it's no longer a separate install. You don't have to go through and download the bits, you know, run psconfig again or whatever tool you used to use to go through and actually update that. So this is now a completely separate product outside of SharePoint. So what this actually means is that we need to set up another WAC server or another WAC server farm, which is going to handle and process our Office web applications for us. Now you're kind of thinking, well, what are you doing this for? Well, it actually makes a lot of sense because we actually have got a number of different rendering engines that are built both into Exchange, built into Link, and into SharePoint. So what we're basically doing here is that we're consolidating the architecture here. So basically, the WAC servers, or the Office Web Application servers, will become the standard rendering engine for everything such as Exchange, Link, and SharePoint. Okay, so it kind of sits out there. The other cool thing too is that it does provide the cleaner URLs when you link out to it. In the previous session, I kind of showed you that. Instead of getting those wacky, funny, grudgy, you know, GUID type things when you send out links or when you go to view that, that's actually now a very clean URL, and that's actually been tidied up heaps. And we can go through there and do full screen modes. One thing I didn't mention, though, is that if you're thinking about setting up a WAC server farm, you only basically multiple servers or multiple farms can actually hook into that one instance. nothing's actually persisted in the wax server farm. All it's used for doing is doing rendering. Servers to do the rendering of the office document. Okay, that's how it's working. So the stuff that you would have seen earlier that Brendan was showing you, that was actually using the WAX servers behind the scenes. You just didn't know it. Okay. So how does this actually work from an architectural perspective? So what we've got is that we've got our clients sitting there. We've got our office web application. Now this can basically be anything. So it's essentially, you know, it can be an iframe, it could be a WAPI host, it could be, you know, basically anything that we've actually got sitting in there. So what we've got is that when we go to do, you know, hook into or look at this particular Office web application, the first thing we do is that we do a call out to the SharePoint farm. Now essentially the SharePoint farm has been wired up and configured to point to the Office web app farm. So essentially what happens is that we want to see this from the client perspective. The SharePoint farm knows what the WAX server farm is. It sends that information back to the client and says, right, now go out and contact that Office web app to do the rendering for us. Okay? So there's a whole lot of, you know, basically some transactions and information actually going on behind the scenes here to see, you know, to get that being processed for us. Now, essentially, the farm can run in two different modes, or you've got two different options around that. So with the Office web apps, you can have it as read-only, okay? And don't quote me on this, but I believe that the licensing around this will be, I was going to say free, but you're going to pay some way. But essentially, if you're having this as read-only, so you're not updating your documents, but essentially this becomes a free download. Now, this may change. So don't quote me on this. I'm not a licensing expert. Okay. But if you go into an edit mode, then basically there will be some type of license fee associated with this. Okay. Some type of eCal or client access license or something associated with it. But that may change. Okay. So the next thing that happens is the Office web app connects back, gets the content out of SharePoint, okay, and renders that back in through the browser. All pretty good stuff. So performance point service applications. So this has had a bit of a revamp, some investments put into it. So I kind of alluded to some of this before. So what we've got now is that we've got some filter enhancements and filter searches provided in there, including cascading filters. Yes, cascading filters was provided in Service Pack 1 of SharePoint Server 2010, but it's now out of the box with 2013 as well. We've also got performance point support on the iPad, for those of you that want to use the iPad. So basically that's your using the nice HTML5 stuff to give that a bit more of a richer experience for you that you've got down there. You've also got support for analysis services for the effective user. And we've got a BI center. So part of that has actually been updated and revamped to make it look a lot better. And we've got the dashboard migration. So once again, what we can do here is that we can create our dashboards in our development environment, export them out, bring them into our test environment, export them out, and put them into our production environment. So we've got a good story around that. Somebody likes it. He's thinking of a question, I can tell. By the way, for those of you that weren't at the beginning session, what I basically got is two cars here to give away. Okay. Now, the rule behind it is that you get to ask me a question. If I can't answer it, I get the opportunity to ask you a question, and if you can't answer it, you don't get the car, but if you do answer it, you get the car. Let's think of those questions. Okay, so PowerPoint automation service. So this is a new one. So this is very, very similar to the Word automation service that we had under SharePoint Server 2010. So this provides the ability to take a PowerPoint presentation and convert it into another format as you would Word. Okay? Did anybody actually use the Word automation? Okay, a few people did. Okay, wasn't one of those more common ones. So basically, it's exactly the same concept here where we take the PowerPoint and we can do some type of conversion into something else with it. Okay, search service application. already kind of alluded to this. This has had a complete re-architecture under the scenes, okay? So if you thought you knew search before under SharePoint Server 2010, you've got to learn a new architecture that's actually happening there behind the scenes. The concepts are still doing indexing, the concepts are still doing querying, they still apply, but the way that that actually works together and the actual architectural structure behind the scenes is very, very different. Basically, there's only one search architecture that we've got now, so no more FAS, no more SharePoint Server Search, no more Windows SharePoint Server Search. Okay, it's just one architecture. Basically, the search center's been completely enhanced. Okay, it's been completely revamped, make it a lot more user-friendly, a lot more dropouts, deeper analysis, you know, of what's actually happening out there. We've got changes in the crawling architecture as well. So the big one here is that we've now got the concept of doing continuous crawl. So if you've got the requirement that your indexes need to be really, really fresh, okay, we can now run a continuous crawl against that actual content. Okay, so everything that you're searching for should be really relevant very, very quickly, okay, or soon. So obviously there's overhead in doing that, but we now provide the ability to do it. Okay, the way that it actually works is it does do incremental crawls, but it does it in a slightly different fashion and manner with regards to how the indexes are actually updated and refreshed. But essentially, if you want your indexes to be really, really fresh, continuous crawl is the way to go. The question is it memory hungry? It depends on which component you're talking about from a search architecture perspective. Okay. With the search architecture, there's a whole lot of new components and different components. We've got index component, query component, analytic component, query component, and admin component. Okay. So there's a lot more things out there that you need to worry about depending on where they sit as part of your search topology. Okay. So the good thing is, I'm going to put Nick Hadley on the spot and say Nick's going to go into a lot more detail around this. Okay, as part of the, you know, the drill down is around search and how that actually works and some of the enhancements you can do around that. A couple of other points. We've got health monitoring reports, so these have been extensively enhanced. So our health analytics reports around, you know, how well is search actually working, what are our, you know, zero results queries that we've got. A lot more thought and a lot more reports have actually gone into that, so they're a lot richer to help with that search admin type role and functionality. And if you're doing multi-tenanted stuff, there's a lot more stuff around or enhancements around how do you handle the multi-tenant environment, of which the majority in this room will probably never do. Okay. User profile service application. Okay. Basically, what we've got is that we've got a whole lot of improvements around the synchronization, okay? Not that UPS was ever a pain. Does anybody manage to get UPS to start? Follow the prereqs, right? Okay, so what we've got now is that we've still got the baby FIM, okay, which I like to call it. So we've got that cut-down version of FIM that's still there, which you can still use, but we've now got this new thing called AD import. Well, this new thing is actually like the old thing that we used to have under 2007. Okay, so we used to do that straight AD import there. We've now got another option, or the new old option, brought into 2013. So kind of looking at it from an architectural perspective, what we've got is that we've got our SharePoint farm, we've got the user profile service application, and we've got the Active Directory sitting up there that we want to bring, you know, data in from. So we can still use FIM, okay? So that still works, you can still use FIM to bring it in. And we can also get the FIM to go off and using VCS go off to external systems. So as part of the user profile, you may have additional information, say from SAP or from something else, that you want to bring in and have as part of your profile. So that still works with FIM. Or we can do a direct Active Directory import. Now this will be a lot quicker, okay? So if you kind of think about what it's doing behind the scenes, it's basically doing like a for each loop. It's actually doing a little bit more than that, but it's basically doing a for each loop, bringing that data in and putting it into the SharePoint. So you're kind of thinking, well, which way do I go? Do I go FIM or do I go to the AD import? If you want to bring in additional system information using VCS, you can only use FIM. If you want to bring it in from AD and only from AD, you use the AD import.
If with the AD import though, it's read only. You can't do any write backs. So if your requirement is to send information back to AD or back to that destination source, you have to go back and use FIM. Okay? Now actually going in between these two different modes is pretty straightforward. It's basically just a configuration setting, which is on the user profile service application, which says which mode do I want to use. Do I want to use FIM or do I want to use the AD import approach? And you can switch between the two of them. Question. The question is, can you use full FIM? Okay. I knew this question was going to come up. Okay. So can you use full FIM? The earlier discussions were that you could, and I still believe that's the case, but I'm not 100% sure, because there has been some movement around that actual discussion. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we can use full-blown FIM. Okay? And for those of you who aren't aware, okay, with full-blown FIM, although you can see that in the UI under SharePoint Server 2010, if you actually flick to that, that was actually unsupported. The feature was originally going to be in there, but they pulled it out, but never got around to updating the UI, unfortunately. Okay, so hopefully nobody did use the full-blown FIM. So the other option, obviously, is that you can actually go out and write your own code to do stuff to get the user profile in through the API. Now, I do know of a particular client that has done this. They had some quite obscure processing that wanted to use. FIM didn't quite cut the mustard, so to speak, for it. So they ended up writing their own, you know, application to do an import in, which is actually legit and works. So if you're using Facebook or Twitter for authentication, why would you be going to the user profile? Because those are two different things. Okay, so this is about getting the user profiles into SharePoint as part of the user profile service. It's not doing authentication, okay? So authentication is handled differently. Okay, good question. Keep them coming. Cool. Okay. So let's use a profile. Okay. Ah, jumped. Okay, so Vivio's graphics service. So what this is that, you know, there's been some enhancements and a bit of a refresh on this. So what we've got now is the ability to actually go in there and do some comments. So you can actually do some inline collaboration and comments on the actual Vivio diagrams that you've got. So that's pretty cool. But we've also extended the data connectivity as well. So we can go out and get the data from BCF, using BCF, using external lists, go out and get it from SQL Azure. We can recalculate the shapes, the formulas based on the underlying data, and it's obviously been optimized for Windows Touch device. So, you know, some quite neat things there. We've also got some additional health analyzer rules that go out there to provide some more information about this. Now, we've actually got a session tomorrow, which is going to go into a lot more detail around how you can actually do some real funky stuff with the Vivio. Okay, not putting Debbie on the spot. I think I am. But she's going to go into that tomorrow and actually show you how you can actually use Vivio, graphics service, etc. So from a word automation perspective, so a couple of you did use it. So this has had a bit of a refresh. So we've now got the ability now, instead of doing it based on a timer job that ran in the background, to say, right, we want that converted now. So we can do this immediate base request of the actual processing. We can also get a notify and update after if the items are actually being completed. And we now support streams as well, as opposed to the actual document types that we had before. So it's a little bit slightly different. Work management service application. So this is a new one. So what this basically provides us to do is to aggregate tasks to a central location. So usually when people are working, or you know, as part of their corporate life, they've got tasks in SharePoint, possibly, tasks in Outlook, and if you're using Project Server, you may have tasks in Project Server as well. So what we can do is using the Work Management Service application and SharePoint Server 2013 is actually hook and integrate into Project 2013, Exchange Server 2013, and basically bring those back out and store them within SharePoint and make them visible within SharePoint. So you've got this one consolidated view where things can actually, you know, if you change one, you can actually see what's actually happening. Team Foundation server, no, there's no task integration with Team Foundation servers, unfortunately. at a guess, the issue behind that is that a task and team foundation server is actually a work item, so it comes onto a work item definition type. So, yeah, hopefully the next release. Hopefully, but no guarantees. So what's going to happen is that we've actually got a session by Alex tomorrow. This tomorrow? Yeah, which is going to go in there and actually show you how you do some of this task stuff, you know, using projects and, you know, how some of that integration stuff works to a little bit. Agree. No pressure. Okay. So, in summary, how did I do for time? Okay. So in summary, what we've got, you know, is that fundamentally the service architecture hasn't changed. We have removed the Office Web Apps, the web analytics, and we've got these new service applications, being the access services, the app management, machine translation service for PowerPoint, automation service for work management, and lots of other cool enhancements that we've got there. Okay. So also just a reminder what's coming up. We've got, coming up next, we've got the new app model. So if you want to get a bit of a taste and overview about how you actually build the applications for Office and SharePoint, good session tomorrow, because you're all SharePoint guys and Office guys, how to do the click ones, visualizing the data, managing your projects, how you do some real cool SharePoint applications using SharePoint Azure, good deep dive into social, a good deep dive into search. And then on Friday, get Microsoft IT talking to us about how they did the cloud and how they manage it. Then for ASB Bank talking about how they're actually using SharePoint as part of the TAP program. And then last of all, now that you've seen this cool stuff, how do you actually get SharePoint Server 2013? Not that anybody leaves early on a Friday after tech ed. So that is basically me. Now, I have got some the old two cars to give away. You can ask your first question. Well, it was me to ask you a question, wasn't it? What is your name? Well done. Okay. Okay, any other questions? Marcus? What's the release? I can't actually answer that question. It's not worth my job, so. Ooh. What permissions do you need in exchange for the to bring it back in? I don't honestly know. My question for you. Okay. What's the purpose of the application load balancer service application? Actually, it doesn't. No. Okay, so the application load balance service, it basically does simple load balancing of the service applications. So it looks at which servers are actually running that service, and it simply does a round robin. The only exception to that is the Excel services application, which basically does sticky sessions. Sorry, Alan. Okay, so from a client perspective. Okay, so the question is, can managed metadata fields in the Office client in 2010 be maintained? I don't know the answer to that one. That's a very good question. What's my email address? Very good. Okay. Cool. Actually, ping me an email on that one and I'll find out for you. Okay, so that's me, once again. Probably finished a little bit early, but that's probably okay. It's been a long day. Resources, and don't forget to do your evaluations.